Aloha, this is Robbie Dingman, in for Catherine Cruz. Mahalo for joining us here on The Conversation. Today is Tuesday, August 18th. We get a briefing on Lala impact from Kauai Mayor Derek Kawakami, a veteran of many severe storms. We hear directly from Hawaii Island about some of the hardest hit areas of the Big Island after Hurricane Lala passes by South Point. The southernmost bakery in the U.S., Punalu'u Bake Shop, famous for sweetbread and malasadas, is working to recover from Lala and a river of mud that devastated the rural outpost. We stop by a Kalihi community hub as the power remains out for parts of Oahu. And the city invites the public to a meeting tonight in Makiki that aims to make the streets safer after officials note a spike in serious crashes in the area. This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Robbie Dingman. We spoke to Kauai Mayor Derek Kawakami a little earlier this morning about Lala. While the Garden Island was spared the extreme damage of earlier storms, he was able to brief us on how the community there fared, and his longtime experience allows him to share some tips on going forward.
You know, I just got back from Maui to be with Mayor Bisson. Governor Green went off to Hawaii Island with Mayor Alameda. And so we kind of split the baby. I said, I'll go check Maui. And based on just what I saw on Maui, and based on what I've been able to see through news reports on the other islands, Kauai dodged a big bullet, and we're grateful and thankful. At the same time, our emergency management administrator, Elton Ushio, has been working across the board with Haima and his counterparts on every other island to see what sort of assistance they're going to need from our team. And generally, that's what we do. If Kauai gets by relatively unscathed, we will send our teams out to go assist the other mayors and their teams. And it's a mutual benefit because, one, we get to see different solutions, different problems that may arise so that we can be ready. And then two, sometimes coming in from the outside in offers some perspective to the local teams as far as managing the response and even being proactive before the disaster happens. So the sharing of information right now is probably what we're taking a look at. Provide assistance so we can get Hawaii Island back up on their feet sooner rather than later. And then whatever assistance we can be to Oahu. You know, this, one of the best things about being a mayor is being able to work with three other great mayors where we share information freely.
So you are in the rare position this time of your island being probably the most unscathed, the least damaged, but yet you still have concern. How do you know that, are you comfortable now that you folks have been able to reach out to some of the more rural communities to check on any smaller damage?
Yeah, we are. Kauai, you know, the sort of vulnerable areas, low-lying areas that are prone to flooding, for the most part, like anything north of the Hanalei Bridge, I mean, those folks are resilient and flood-ready. So usually we're learning from their response. And we really take the approach of letting the community lead and having government support them because those are the boots on the ground whenever a natural disaster is happening. So we still have some work to do. We're not out of the woods yet because just a little amount of rainfall can really create some problems just because of the saturation levels. And, you know, we have a ton of albizia trees. I would say those are a nuisance. They break real easily. They grow real big and they create a lot of damage. And so we're just taking it day by day as more reports come in. You know, these type of storms, there's always a tail end of things that will tend to pop up.
Sure. And you folks, from your extensive experience, are probably the pros at preparation. Can you talk a little bit about what some of the preparation ahead of this helped you to feel pretty comfortable that you were as ready as you could be?
Well, it's really a collective effort because we have a number of large private landowners that pre-storm, they're out there cleaning their own drains, cleaning their own ditches, clearing out debris. Our county public works does the same thing. We take a look at clearing out drains, making sure that shoulders are maintained, taking a look at trees and if it poses a risk to utility lines. So just on a day-to-day basis, we try our best to maintain so that when storms come, we're not really scrambling. We tend to pre-position equipment in areas that our workers can get to really quickly if we're in a bind. So your normal sort of checklist of pre-positioning assets, making sure that we have manpower available before, during, and after the storm event are all things that it's just a part of our operation whenever we're faced with a storm.
Can you share what you saw on Maui? You said there was more significant damage there.
Well, it's going to seem like everything pales in comparison compared to what Hawaii Island has been faced with. But I would say this. If I had a large tree in my yard that was taller than my house or was tall enough to reach a neighbor's house, I'd be seriously considering pruning back that tree or even removing it. We went out to St. Joseph Church up about by Makaua'au, and Father Edison, it was a great reunion because he came from St. Raphael Church. And just by happenstance, we went up to St. Joseph Church to go take a look at the damage. And Father Edison was there, and there was just a huge tree that just fell on top of one of their structures and just created tremendous water damage. We went to a road above Makaua'au. It's called Ehu Road. It's a very country, rural road. And there's elderly people that, you know, access their property on that county road. I saw a bird's nest of just debris and trees that I don't know how long it's going to take the Maui crews to clear that out with chainsaws and excavators and hauling it out to clear that road. But based on what I saw yesterday, it just looked like a monumental task. I would say that moving forward, it's going to be a collective effort. If you're a large landowner and you have large trees that pose a risk to utility lines, you're going to have to look in the mirror and ask yourself, do you want to be the person that is responsible for cutting out electricity because you haven't maintained trees on your property? And that goes for us as well. We have a number of easements that we're going to have to inspect and take a look. If we have trees on county properties, does it pose a risk to other structures or to our utility lines? And if it does, we're going to have to make the hard call to go remove those trees. Yeah, I've seen a lot of complications just on tree branches and trees falling over with high winds that are coming from different directions that these trees are not used to. You couple that up with very soft, saturated earth, and these trees weren't breaking. They were just being uprooted. It brought back similar memories to Iniki, in a sense.
Wow. I was there for some of the aftermath of Iniki, so I know how devastating it was and how power didn't come back on for months, as you know.
And that's the sad part, too, because it sucks to be without power and to not have any clear indication of how long that's going to be. And if you have a multi-generational household where you have young kids and elderly people that may need oxygen or special care, you know, it becomes a situation in and of itself.
Are you folks in a position that you will send yourself or others to help out in other counties?
Oh, yeah, we are. Yeah, we have people chomping at the bit to go help out. Yeah, the different emergency management agencies across the state is like the relationships that they've been able to build throughout the course of, you know, fires, floods, rock slides, landslides, is something truly a sight to see as mayor, to see these different teams just click up, collaborate and work together. I mean, I wish the general public could see it because it's truly a testament of government that works and is working for the people.
You've already given a good tip for homeowners and for larger landowners about trimming those trees that might be over structures. Any other tips you might offer our listeners?
Yeah, just not to take things lightly, because that was a Category 1 and that was not a direct hit. You know, that was Hurricane and Tropical Storm Lala just kind of like coming by and saying hello and not really knocking on the door that badly. And if it had made a direct hit, I can only imagine how much more destruction would have been apparent. And so I think this is a good lesson learned. It's been a while since Hurricane Iniki came over Kauai at a Category 4, but you don't need a Category 4 hurricane to create tremendous amount of damage, hardship, and I mean, it's the economic recovery is going to take a while as well. And so it's really, really sad and concerning.
But yeah, take it seriously. I did think that it seemed like the Kona lows certainly had raised everyone's awareness so much that I think people who might have dismissed it before, they seemed more, on our island, it seemed more like the people were taking it serious.
Yeah. And, you know, we're going to have to keep an eye on those folks that have been impacted, because what we've learned dealing with a number of disasters is that people that are struggling with mental health issues, it is not obvious at the surface. And it may manifest itself that every time it rains, you may notice a family member, a child, an adult, or somebody that seems perfectly fine, dealing with tremendous anxiety, almost panic. And we have to keep an eye on our family members and our neighbors to make sure that if there's some sort of mental health issue that's going to be a byproduct of dealing with all of these storms that we've been dealing with, we have to let them know that it's okay to go seek help. We have to have a list of resources that are readily available to guide people to who they should be talking to, because mental health issues are not obvious at the surface. And it's just another thing that we should all be aware of, is that these families that have gone through tremendous hardship may suffer aftershocks in the form of some sort of mental health issue down the road.
Important thing to remind people of, because as you said, that's not something immediately apparent.
Yeah, it's not.
All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Appreciate your help. You take care.
You too.
Aloha.
Aloha.
We've been hearing from Kauai Mayor Derek Kawakami about Lala impact and tips for coping and prepping for our next storms. HPR also wants to hear from you about how your community is coming together after the storm. You can email us or send a voice memo to TalkBack at hawaiipublicradio.org, or call our TalkBack line and leave a voicemail at 808-792-8217. Your stories may be shared on air and online. Here's what one listener has shared with us.
My name is Mark. My wife, Laura, and I live in Kula, Maui, and our experience is that we have no information on Maui. Nobody remembers that we're part of this storm, too. And if your internet, like it is in our case, you have no information, you have no way of finding out what's going on. And I just think, you know, much progress has been made through the years to include Maui, but there is so far to come. And it would really be helpful to have some way of getting information to the public. There's no radio station. There's nothing. There's no way to get information if you have cable out and internet out. We don't know what's going on yet. We have battery backup for our home, so we have lovely electricity, but no information.
Support for HPR comes from HMSA, celebrating nearly 90 years of dedication in supporting the health and well-being of the people of Hawaii with a commitment to caring for the community. Learn more at hmsa.com.
An admission scandal at Mexico's top university has potential students reeling. The school is making everyone retake the entrance exam after allegations of cheating. And students like this one are nervous.
Entonces, o sea, yo si repitiera el examen, a mí me...
The scandal is also raising questions about who gets access to one of Latin America's top-ranked universities. Next time on The World.
Beginning this morning at 1, after All Things Considered.
Support for HPR comes from KTA Superstores, serving the Hawaii Island community since 1916. Learn more about its support for the island community at ktasuperstores.com.
Hurricane Lala hit the Big Island hard. Strong winds and heavy rainfall caused flooding, mudslides, and moved mountains of debris, closing roads, knocking out power, and prompting water shortages. City officials and county officials have been working to repair damage and strengthen emergency contact lines to get people the help they need. Honolulu Civil Beat reporter Taylor Kozloff has been reporting from Hawaii Island during the hurricane. Good morning, Taylor. Thanks for making time to talk.
Hi, Ravi. Thank you for having me.
Well, we appreciate you reporting in from the front line since you have had your boots on the ground.
Yeah, of course. Seeing some absolute devastation across the island. Like you said, a historic amount of flooding in Waimea, but especially in Kau, which was hit the hardest.
And you went there. Can you tell us a little bit about where you've been to do your reporting?
I've been around Hilo, around Puna and Volcano. Access is just starting to open in Kau. So we've got our photographers heading out there now to take a look, and some other reporters coming over to get in Kau and report from there. I'm reporting from Hilo at the moment, or calling from Hilo at the moment, but just access is just starting to open up in these areas because, as one resident described, a biblical amount of water tore through homes and businesses, ripped apart highways and bridges, but folks have been working hard to clear debris and get roads open for folks.
Could you start with the sad news of the woman who died in Na'alehu? You have some more information about her now?
Yeah, we spoke to a resident this morning who told us that it was a woman in her 90s. She was found in a field, unfortunately. She was a school teacher. Police have not released her name quite yet, so that they can inform the family, but residents told us that they believe that she was trying to get to a shelter to ride out the storm. Her house was okay, but they think that she believed that it might be safer at the shelter, but unfortunately she wasn't able to make it.
Yeah, so sad. We had thought for over the weekend that we might have been able to escape without any deaths.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's just absolutely insane in Kau. Floodwaters, drove paths that didn't exist before. Visibility was horrible. Trees were coming down. Homes ripped apart by winds. It was definitely complete devastation over there.
What are the biggest impacts that you've heard about? I know you haven't been able to get to the hardest hit areas, but you've been in areas where there's been damage. What do you see as the biggest impacts?
Right now is power. A lot of power lines are down. About 27,000 people here on Hawaii Island are still without power. And generators are out in Hilo. So for a lot of folks, that means, they're in the dark until they can get it back up. A lot of people have, no running water, or water pressure is really low. Kau is on a boil water notice. A lot of folks without power. In North Kohala, I was told by residents that, trees fell on roofs ripped off of homes, a lot of flooding in homes as well. I, like many folks, are dealing with mold as well, which will be, months of cleanup. So,
any particular stories from residents that you wanted to share?
Yeah, I think, just like we saw in the Kona Lows, community coming together to help. A contractor that spoke to us this morning said he's getting a lot of requests for people, asking to, for him to come out and help restore their homes. But he's getting just as many calls from contractors in Kona and across the island asking him, how can we help? What do you need? And how can we get out there to help other people? The Punalu'u bake shop in Na'alehu was destroyed, but we were told this morning that a 40-foot container of sweetbread was found, and they, just opened up the doors and gave it away. A lot of people sharing, a lot of folks who, lost things as well, but are still giving whatever they can to help out others. People, trekking in with, you know, 4x4 vehicles to get water and food and gasoline to folks in Kau who have been cut off. In Pune, I've seen a lot of people, you know, working together to feed the damage assessors and to check in on their neighbors. And, you know, North Kohala, you know, folks just knocking on doors, making sure that everyone's okay. Yeah, just, you know, community coming together and helping each other out. A lot of people don't have much, but they're giving whatever they can. And I think that's just a testament to Hawaii and the people here. You know, we look out for one another and we help other people. So that's been really, really heartwarming to see. And it's continuing to happen.
Thank you, Taylor. That's Hawaii, a great place to end. Tough situation, but people coming together. Thank you so much for your help.
Of course. Thank you so much, Robbie.
We were talking with Honolulu Civil Beat's Hawaii Island Community Engagement Reporter Taylor Kozloff. Find her stories online at civilbeat.org. And funny that she mentioned the story about Punalu'u Bake Shop. We have a story that our Maddie Bender got. Hurricane Lala took out a beloved sweetbread bakery in Na'alehu. Punalu'u Bake Shop sees 500,000 visitors per year, often selling up to 2,000 of its famous malasadas every day. When we spoke with General Manager Zach Kennedy on Monday afternoon, he hadn't eaten yet, but he had sent out an update at 4:30 a.m. to the bakery's supporters, along with before and after photos of the area. Mud and debris caked the entrance to the southernmost bakery in the U.S. Kennedy told HPR's Maddie Bender that the damage has been unimaginable.
Hurricane Lala came in, and at first it didn't seem like, you know, too bad. It was definitely more rough than we're used to. But at about like 9 o'clock at night, something dramatically shifted. I don't know the specific details, but it seems like one of the waterways broke free and caused a wall of water to come down the hill, and it took out the cemetery, and it caused a tremendous amount of rock, mud, tree debris to go right through the bakery. Basically catastrophic damage. We're looking at almost like a 15-20 foot wall of rock and rubble right now. It made it through both of our bakeries. We have a cookie factory, and we have a retail section and a bread bakery. And all three of them sustained catastrophic damage.
Wow. Okay. And you shared that you have 54 employees, all of them local.
Yeah.
What's that been like, getting a hold of them and just making sure that everyone's all right?
It's been incredibly emotionally draining. Because we don't have electricity down here, we don't have cell phone towers, not being able to communicate with them and check with them if they're okay, it causes a lot of worry. Because we're not only a company with employees, you know, they're our family. We take care of each other. And not knowing if they're okay was very, very stressful.
Where were you at the time? Where were you over the weekend?
Yeah, so I live in Ocean View, which is kind of up on top of the mountain. I was sitting at home. Just kind of waiting out the storm, thinking, you know, it's going to pass soon and then I'll be able to go check on things. And unfortunately, I got the news the very next morning when I managed to get online for a moment and I saw the photos of the bakery. And I wanted to get there as soon as possible, but the roads were all closed and I wasn't actually able to get out there until today. The number one priority for me today was getting into town. We had a container that actually floated away. It was a freezer container. And it was full of product. And I wanted to get in there and make sure it was okay. And it was still cold, frozen, dry. It was sealed tight. And we were actually able to get that distributed out to the community. Because, I mean, they haven't been able to leave town for a few days. And, you know, some of them are running low on gas. So being able to give the product that was still good to the community to help them out, it was number one priority today. You know, it's going to waste if it's just sitting there. And I'm just so grateful that it was still cold, frozen, and ready to be handed out to hundreds of people.
And some of them your own employees.
Yeah, actually, that was, you know, I couldn't communicate with some of them, and they actually seeing them walking over and seeing them made my heart just so happy.
Yeah, of course. I mean, where do you even start to think about addressing the catastrophic damage, as you put it?
I would tell you that, you know, I've been there for 4 years now, and it was one of the most beautiful places I had ever seen. Gardens, just immaculately, naturally beautiful, and really exemplified rural Hawaii life, plantation style. And going there today and seeing the destruction was not something I have seen in my life. It's the entire property has sustained massive damage. It's just, it's going to take us time to assess. It's going to take us time to start clearing it out and then start planning for the future.
I've been lucky enough to go there a few times. It's one of those rare places that feels as beloved by locals as it is visitors.
Definitely agree there. You know, we get almost 500,000 people visiting the bakery every year. Over the last 24 hours, I've received emails from people in the community throughout Hawaii and hundreds of emails from people around the world just sharing their thoughts and prayers with us and wishing us the best and sharing us on to a rebuilding stage. And it just, it's so wonderful to know that the bakery made an impact on people's lives, that it gave them enough, you know, willpower to send an email at 2 o'clock in the morning just to tell us that they care.
Well, what do you want people, those who already know and love the bakery, what do you want them to know at this point, or any ways they can support efforts to recover?
So right now we're still in the assessment phase. What I would want people to know is, one, keep sending your thoughts and prayers to us. We appreciate it greatly. We will try to come back as soon as possible for y'all. And, you know, if you're on the island visiting or you live on the other side of the island, I would just ask that maybe give it a few more days before you come and visit and see it, because it's very congested in town. There's only one lane open right now. It is a hazardous condition. You know, try to leave the traffic way open for those who actually live in the community and work in the community, so that people who need to be there can get there and do what they need to do. And then the people that live there can actually get out of town at a reasonable rate.
Anything else right now?
At this time, I have nothing else. Just know that it was a beautiful thing to see the community to come together. So I just want to take a moment to thank the community who helped us distribute a product out today. And, you know, stay tuned. We'll give you guys updates and we'll try to come back stronger and better than before.
Thank you, Zach. I hope you get some rest.
Thank you so much. You have a wonderful day and take care of yourself.
Thank you. You too.
That was Zach Kennedy, the general manager of Punalu'u Bake Shop in Na'alehu. He spoke with HPR's Maddie Bender about the heavy damage that the beloved bakery suffered. HPR has heard from many of you about your experiences during Hurricane Lala. You can share your story with us by email or phone, write to us at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org, or leave a voicemail at 808-792-8217. Your stories may be shared on air or online. Here's what Peter shared.
This is Peter from North Kihei, and I was with my auntie, and when we woke up in the morning yesterday, there was no power, and it lasted till not sure 3 or 2 o'clock afternoon. I tried to call information, non-emergency police number, and I couldn't get anybody. Then I tried to call 911 and also couldn't get through. And then I tried Auntie's. She has like when she falls down, you know, like alarm, and she pressed the button and they will send the ambulance, and it didn't work also. So it didn't work. So it's horrible when you need it most, like 911, let's say the tree fall on you or something, you know, or there's a deep water. It storms, so you would think you can count on to call emergency, but it didn't work. And then when the electricity finally went on, our frozen ice creams and all kinds of other things were totally fluid, and so I just tossed them away because I didn't want to get sick. I hope everybody's safe, and aloha.
Support for HPR comes from the Olson Trust, with a mission to support growing sustainable agriculture, protecting natural resources, and investing in Hawaii's people. OlsonTrust.com.
Next in our series on the human brain,
the redness of red, the taste of ice cream, the feeling of pain when you stub your toe. Thomas Nagel put it like this. He said, for a conscious organism, there is something it is like to be that organism.
But how does consciousness actually emerge from the physical structures in the brain? Our special exploration, Brain Waves, continues on the next On Point.
Beginning this afternoon at 2, after the world.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from Dowling Company. For more than 3 decades, building housing for the Maui community and committed to building in balance. An HPR supporter since 2001.
Nearly 60,000 Hawaiian Electric customers across the state are still without power as of this morning. HECO is again asking customers on Oahu from Salt Lake to East Honolulu who do have electricity to conserve power today. HPR's Mark Ladau visited Kalihi Valley Station yesterday. It's a community hub where Representative Ikaika Hussey brought a small portable generator for those without power. About 10 people were there charging their phones. Hussey describes the effects of the lingering power outage on the neighborhood. He starts with a bit of background on the Kalihi Valley Station.
For the last 10 years or so, this space here across from Kalihiuka Elementary School was vacant. And I understand that there was like a game room upstairs. And what we did maybe 9 months ago is we decided to take over this space because it's right across from the elementary school. We decided to make it into a positive place for kids to come and hang out and, you know, do homework after school and just feel safe. And so we have shave ice after school. We have some coffee and, you know, sometimes my son likes to make baked goods. And we have a wonderful lady who lives in the area who takes care of the place and runs it every day. And right now, because the power is out here in Kalihi, we decided to set up a little battery charging station. We have a portable battery, and folks are coming in to plug in their iPhones and their Android phones and just keep communication open for all of us here in Kalihi. And it's really a shame because, you know, Kalihi is one of the last places on this island to get our power back, and it feels like the working class communities are sort of the last in the queue, which to me is a real problem because working people actually subsidized the energy transition so that the communities that got their power back first, like Hawaii Kai or Kahala, so that they could get their solar and battery over the last decade or so. And to me, there's a real inequity there. We're looking at remedying that legislatively by making sure that everyone, especially working families, like our families here in Kalihi, can get the basic resilience and security that the energy transition affords us, that should afford us. You know, knowing that if the power line goes down, that they will be able to keep their fridge, you know, all their food in the fridge, and, you know, just maintain basic support for their family.
So how long has this community, maybe the neighborhood, have been without power, as far as you know?
For some of my constituents, we're almost at 3 days now without electricity. There's a certain level of frustration, but also we tend to be a little bit overly patient. but to me, there's equity issues. You know, like, why is it that the folks that are in the wealthier neighborhoods get their power first? The fixes are not going to be easy, but I do think that if we center justice at the heart of the questions around energy, then we'll have very different and better outcomes.
And Can you talk about what you have here? Like, so what do we have
over here is a Duracell, a big Duracell power pack that I bought on, you know, secondhand several years ago. And, you know, we bust it out for emergencies like this. And I'm just glad that it's come under such such heavy use, that there's such a real use for it. But I also wish that we had our power back.
And so as far as being available to the public or anyone who needs power, do you know how long you can or are able to stay?
I think for this afternoon, we have about another hour and a half of battery power on this battery pack. As soon as it's depleted, my plan is to actually take it to my office at the Capitol where there is electricity and recharge it and bring it back this evening for folks who need power. I believe strongly that Hawaiian Electric is as motivated as we are to have electricity back. You know, I'm sure that they're working very hard. A lot of those guys they live here in Kalihi too. So they want power for their own ohana. So I think we're all on the same page. I'm looking forward to moving to the next page though, which is where we move to an energy system which is more based on justice and equity.
Jason Cardenas lives nearby and was at the station charging his phone. He was concerned that he might have to throw away all the food in his refrigerator.
I don't know if it was yesterday or the day before yesterday. 6 o'clock, the thing off the power, never come back on. I get ice box at home and all my food going to spoil.
Are they already spoiled or
not? No, the thing is, I'm not opening the ice box.
Yeah, that's how you preserve it, yeah.
Yeah, so the thing, because I don't know how long it takes, so the thing preserve the coolness. But the thing is, the longer they don't do it, no come with the electric. Guarantee I'm going to waste everything.
How many days, how much longer do you have until you have to throw them?
I don't know, maybe, but I would say a day or so.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it would be. Because that would be like 3 days, I think. 3 days, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so it would be like 3 days. Then all the food, probably not going to be good, you know what I mean?
Yeah. What kind of food you got?
Oh, steaks. I get steak ribs. I get chicken. I get hot dogs. I get Portuguese sausage, any kind.
Is it full? So it's full?
Yes, full. I get a big ice box. I know more than small kind of ice box like everybody.
How much is in there, you think?
I don't know.
A lot.
But I get eggs and everything all inside the ice box. I get trays of eggs and everything, you know what I mean?
Yeah. How often do you lose power here? Not often?
No. First time like this.
Oh, yeah.
This is the longest. Maybe some storms we do lose power, but the thing don't go off like this. This is long time. The Hawaiian Electric, they got to hurry up. People going to lose money, you know what I mean? Because all the food going to spoil. Then, well, we got to throw all the food. Then later on, we got to buy food again, refill up the ice box again.
Is this the whole block out of power?
Yes.
Everyone?
I heard, no, all the way up the valley and down the valley too.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's not. The other side of Kalihi, they get the other side. We buy camp school and the other side. Yeah, I get. But over here, no more.
Are you charging your phone right here?
Yeah, I'm charging my phone. I'm waiting for charge my phone. See, because look. No more electric. Oh, everybody dead. You know what I mean? Without electric, look how much people affect. That thing affect many people.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to the phone, that's the resource for everybody.
Yeah,
the phone.
Yeah.
If their phone die, no can charge power, really. That's everybody's lifeline right there.
Next door, the KFAT Oriental store was still open despite being pitch black inside. Wendy Kim has operated the convenience store by herself for the last 12 years. She says she's at risk of losing thousands of dollars of refrigerated food.
Can you tell me what's in here?
Food, the sausage, bacon, chicken.
It's like chicken wings?
Yeah. Here, the fish, sausage, chicken wing, chicken legs. For Philippine food, something a lot inside here, see?
Yeah, so I'm seeing chicken parts, yeah, some meat, some food.
Yeah,
oh yeah, that's chicken wings also.
Yeah, I say okay for customer. Then you put them, yeah. In all stock for cooler, for ice cream inside too.
Ice cream in there?
Yeah.
And how long have you been without power?
Just 2 days, really.
2 days? So are you gonna...
The morning yesterday, I come here. When I leave my place and I come here, like, no more power in the morning yesterday. 6 o'clock, I open, but 6 o'clock I open over here, I don't see.
No power?
No more power. Yesterday, about I think the hour, 2 hours around that, I don't know like, what's going on. I live Hawaii 34 years already, but now something happened like that, yeah, first time.
This
usually sometimes, no more lighter, but you know, hour, 2 hours, maximum 3 hours, the electric, they all they get bad, but now, oh man, look. Oh, I cry.
Yeah, this
business,
is all...
I lose, business slow, and then now something happened like that again. That's why. This one I do by my own.
Mm-hmm.
I don't hire people. I buy, I put over here, I sell and yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
How do you, yeah, do you know how much is maybe here?
Around $1,000, one cooler. Yeah.
$1,000?
Yeah. Around that, but this one too cooler and ice cream too. Ice cream a lot, man. Look.
Yeah. Do you think you'll have to throw this one away, or can you still save it?
I don't know yet. Yeah, I have to wait. Yeah. I have to wait. That's why I don't open cooler. Yeah.
To save this.
Yeah. Get saved like that. I cannot open. You that, and then the customer come by, drink something. I cannot open. I let them go.
Yeah. I know, and this is all.
Open, I don't worry, but I just go get a lot of fat meal.
Yeah, you have milk
oh,
in
my
here.
Goodness.
And but you're still open today?
Yeah.
How come you're open today, even though just no, you have
usually I have to pay bill pay so much thing I do, that's why I open. Usually if I get money more comfortable, I close. But now I have to open. Even yesterday no more power, I still open.
We've been hearing from Kalihi residents and business owners who spoke with HPR's Mark Ladau. We've also been hearing from you about how you were affected by Hurricane Lala. Arietta writes, I was in Hawaii Kai during the storm. We lost power and cell at the beginning of the storm. We were cut off from all communication. There was nothing on the radio. I tried HPR and other FM stations. There was nothing. I have been through other disasters on the mainland. Radio was always reliable. They would broadcast the TV station. At least the information was up to date. We did not get power until afternoon of 17 August. I hope the emergency response is better next disaster. We appreciate the feedback from Arletta and others. We invite you to share your story with us. Send an email or a voice memo to talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. Or you can leave a voicemail by calling our talkback line at 808-792-8217. Your stories may be shared on air and online.
Support for HPR comes from the Honolulu Museum of Art Cafe, serving dinner on Fridays, featuring globally influenced American cuisine and live music. Reservations at honolulumuseum.org.
September is Classical Music Month.
To celebrate, we want to know which classical music pieces are your favorites.
We'll compile our listeners' top 100 picks into a list that we'll unveil starting September 16th here on HPR2.
Last year's number one listener favorite was Beethoven's Symphony No. 5.
What will this year's number one be? It's up to you to decide.
And to submit your picks, visit us online at hawaiipublicradio.org/classicalmonth.
We look forward to seeing your favorites.
Support for HPR comes from Legacy of Life Hawaii. This National Multi-Ethnic Donor Awareness Month, honoring the generosity of Asian and Pacific Islander donors and the lives transformed through organ, eye, and tissue donation.
Honolulu City officials are inviting residents and everyone worried about street safety in Makiki to attend a community meeting tonight to talk about problems and potential solutions. It's part of a citywide plan to address high-priority intersections where dozens of crashes occurred in the last decade. Complete Streets Administrator Renee Espiao spoke to us this morning about why the Wilder Street area is a corridor of concern and what can be done to help make the area safer.
We have 7 streets that we are currently looking at in urban Honolulu under our Safer Streets Honolulu project. They are all kind of the highest tier of what we consider high injury corridors. So we got a federal grant to study potential safety changes and to get feedback from the public about any changes to the roadways. So the corridors include Wilder and Piikoi, which we'll be looking at tonight kind of with the Makiki community. But the other corridors in the project are Baratania, Young, King Street, and Kaheka Street and Kapi'olani Boulevard. So we will have some additional public meetings later this year for some of those other corridors to talk about safety treatments.
I see. And the invitation for people to come to the meeting mentions that the crash analysis showed these areas account for a disproportionate number of serious injury and fatal crashes. Can you give us an idea about how big that is?
Yeah. So the Wilder Corridor especially has come up as a corridor of concern for us in two separate studies. The first is when we prepared the Oahu Pedestrian Plan. It was highlighted as sort of the top tier of high pedestrian injury corridors, in which we kind of just focused on conflicts between vehicles and pedestrians, which we know is a particular concern for Honolulu. And then it came up again in the Oahu Vision Zero Action Plan, where we kind of looked at all modes and safety hotspots. And again, it came up as an area that we needed to look at. And that study considers bicycle and pedestrian crashes and then injury crashes for vehicles. So we do see some kind of across the board safety concerns, pedestrian, of course, but other modes as well.
And are you talking several of these types of crashes a year or within a few years? Just give me an idea of how many crashes that you're seeing.
So like over a, say, 7-year period that we've really looked at, there might be, you know, dozens of injury crashes. So, you know, certainly more than one or two a year. We don't have fatalities on these specific streets, fortunately, in that time period. But we did have a fatality recently on Kiwalo Street around the corner. So the community is pretty sensitive to traffic safety issues and how easily, you know, sort of a simple pedestrian crash can turn fatal.
Sure. What's an overview of what people should expect if they attend tonight?
So we'll start the meeting with welcoming people, kind of asking them where they live in the community and kind of where they come from. And then we'll present an overview of some of the safety issues that we've seen arise through the crash analysis, such as, you know, left turn conflicts. And then we'll kind of walk people through some of the proposed ideas that we have for the corridor. And then we'll have boards and maps set up throughout the room for all the different blocks of Wilder Avenue between Punahou and Pensacola, we're really focused on. And then Piikoi Street, Mauka of H1, and Lunalilo Street. So people can, you know, kind of get up close and personal with all the different blocks and intersections and share their concerns and, you know, things that they would like us to address, as well as kind of take a look at some of the early concepts that we're proposing and provide feedback to us.
What are some of the potential roadway traffic sign changes that you're going to be talking about?
So a big one is going to be really looking at the cross section of Wilder Avenue. Right now it's a 4-lane cross section, which is a pretty typical kind of unsafe road cross-section that we're used to addressing. You know, we're going to be looking at things that make that operation safer and more efficient. So really looking at going to more of a 3-lane cross-section with 1 lane in each direction, left turn provisions, which is something that is lacking at a lot of the intersections now. So, you know, cars have to kind of jog around vehicles in front of them that are making lefts. And then when we reconfigure the roadway to be a bit more efficient, work better, we then start to have space for bicycle lanes. And some places, there's enough right-of-way to even make those protected, sometimes not, because the right-of-way line is really variable on Wilder Avenue as different developments have come over the years, right? And the city's sought to adjust where the curb line is. And then, of course, parking, trying to fit that in everywhere we can. Longer term, we're looking also at signal changes and sidewalk improvements, but those will tend to be things that take a little longer, something we can't accomplish with some of our upcoming paving projects.
Have you, since Makiki is such a densely populated area with pedestrians, bicycles, transit, drivers. Are there other tactics that you've seen used successfully in other areas that you think will also apply here?
Yeah, well, there are a lot of people walking. Like you said, it's a really busy neighborhood. And there are a lot of very long crosswalks. Some of them don't have traffic signals or even stop signs. And some, you know, do have signals, but you're sort of out in the road exposed for so long. So we certainly want to look at providing curb extensions and medians and things that really simplify and shorten crossings to make all that wonderful pedestrian activity a little safer. There's also no bike facilities in the area, and there's also not a ton of mixed land use. So you have like a lot of population, a lot of density, but not a ton of commercial options like within really close walking distance, which makes bike travel sort of like the logical next step to reach all the commercial stuff that's down on King Street, for example. So other than Pensacola, there's really not much up in Makiki. So I think that's a good solution, particularly for the Makiki community. Our bus stops, too, get a lot of love, a lot of use. We think maybe we could increase some of the amenities at some of those to make them more comfortable, more attractive for that urban area. And even drivers, we think we'll have, you know, some benefits. We're trying to increase parking on Piikoi Street to take advantage of the wider right-of-ways and put some angled parking in there, which is really efficient. And like I said, the left turn provisions, we believe, on Wilder Avenue will sort of make traffic flow a little smoother and a little more predictable. So lots of things that we've tried in other places that we think would certainly benefit the Makiki community.
Sure. And if someone can't attend tonight, how do they give feedback?
Yeah, so we have a web map online. If you go to honolulu.gov/complete streets, we have all our projects organized kind of geographically around the island. This one is has its home on the Urban Core page. But I believe we have right on the announcements on the homepage our interactive web map where people can identify issues of concern and propose solutions for us to consider. And we also have an email. It's completestreets@honolulu.gov, where we get lots of feedback from the public about different roadways in our community.
I'm going to ask you to tell me again the when and where the meeting is tonight.
Yeah, so the meeting is tonight, Tuesday, August 18th. We're going to start at 6:30 p.m., and it's at Makiki District Park in the first floor auditorium, so the older building on Ke'emoku Street. And we'll probably go till about 8 or 8:30 or so. And we'll have some refreshments for folks, knowing that, you know, we're meeting during the dinner hour. And if you want to bring kids, that's more than welcome. We just hope the public will come out and sort of share their thoughts with us.
We've been hearing from Renee Espiao, the administrator of Honolulu's Complete Streets program. She's been telling us what to expect from a community meeting tonight at Makiki District Park. Head to our website later today for more information about the Safer Streets project. That wraps it up for today. Tomorrow we plan to hear from Kauai's Utility Cooperative. What can the Garden Island experience teach Hawaiian Electric? Call our talkback line, 808-792-8217. Email us at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. Listen to archived shows online by searching for The Conversation as a podcast on Spotify or Apple, or check our website. I'm Robbie Dingman. Please join us tomorrow for more of The Conversation.